I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Steam, no one can love you for you. You have to love who you see in the mirror.
Yeah. But here's the thing I've learned in recovery.
Okay.
I have had to. The biggest changes come when I act my way into right thinking. I can't necessarily think my way into right acting. It's almost like if
you have to
do it,
embody.
You have to just do it.
Yes.
And then the confidence comes. So feel me when I bring it, sing it loud. I'm
from the loop and I'm proud. Run a mile for the cause. I'm right. Hi guys, it's your girl Nahumma, your favorite Jew from the loo. Welcome back to my podcast. And today I am so thrilled to introduce to you the one and only Heather, the owner of the Selfie Room here in downtown St. Louis.
The one and only, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted to like really bump you up because here's the thing. There's 2 things that have changed my life, my podcast and the Selfie Room.
You're going to make me cry today.
I know
you?
I am. I know I am. And I wanted to go into why, because I think I've brushed on it briefly, but I've been waiting for this moment.
Yes.
To share with you how the Selfie Room has changed my life.
So I have been, you've told me a couple of times.
Yeah.
And every time I'm still incredulous. I still really can't believe it. But also, I've been waiting for this moment to be on your podcast for months.
Really?
Maybe. Yes. Yes. I've, That's you know, ever nice. Since we first talked about it, ever since I first met you, and I've seen other guests on your podcast before me, I'm just like, I'm going to be on. But Aww. It's had to like work out, right?
Yeah.
It's just the right time. So, because
yeah.
there's always something going on.
Literally, life of an entrepreneur, which we'll get into that as well.
Okay.
And life be lifing. Let's be real.
Oh, for real. And some of us go to Africa and climb mountains.
No big deal. Just sprinkle that in. The audience knows I owe them a solo episode, which will be coming. It's just, it's intimidating. It's nice having a guest because we can ping pong, right? There's that
right.
energy to just sit in front of a camera.
Mm-hmm.
But again, so going back, we met this year, only 8 months ago.
Are you serious?
It's been less than a year. We've known each other for less than a year.
Really?
Yeah, because
Where did we first meet?
We met unofficially at Babes in Business in December, but that was briefly, right? And then it was Mocktails and Mindfulness that was here.
Yes.
I think that was in either December or January.
It was January.
January. Yeah.
Or it could have been December.
Because we picked our word of the year.
I just remember it was snowing. There was snow on the ground. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I'm like, what am I doing downtown? At night. And it's snowing. I'm like, I really must love Angela.
Yeah. I think a lot of people thought that.
Yeah.
But it was like, there was a good showing.
It was amazing. Mm. But, you said something that really impacted me that night. So like doing this, I've gotten more comfortable being in front of the camera, but this is a very different setting than just like taking pictures or doing reels or that kind of thing. And you were talking about how like a lot of people view selfies as something selfish, as something self-absorbed. And you're like, but no, like life is meant to be celebrated and we should take those moments. And I'm 29, but already I've seen so many friends, coworkers, jobs, things that you take for granted suddenly are gone. And I wished that I would have documented more.
Yeah.
Like with my dad, I only have like 2 pictures with him.
Really?
Because I hate pictures and I always thought I looked terrible.
Really?
And I really regret that now.
Do you mean with him or
with
of him?
Him?
Pictures of
with
you
him.
With him.
Yeah. Like the last
because
picture I have of me and my
I
dad, I was like 5.
You were how old?
Like 5.
And how long ago did we lose your dad?
He's still here.
Oh. Are you kidding me?
He has dementia. But he's like...
Where is he?
He's at... Well, currently he's in the hospital, but... Sorry, that's a lot to just throw in the beginning of a podcast episode. I'm so sorry for the trauma dump.
I'm just sorry. I thought the way you were talking about it, like, you still don't have any opportunities, but I see what you mean.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's definitely different, like, where he's at with his dementia.
Right.
But, like, that's why I started documenting. Right. And if there's one thing, talking about entrepreneurs that I've noticed, there's two problem points that they all have, which is, one, they wish they would have documented earlier. And two, they're uncomfortable in front of the camera.
Hmm.
So because of you, I was like, wait, yeah, why shouldn't I document my life? Why shouldn't I be proud of myself? Why shouldn't I, like, nobody cares what you do or don't do. Like, even if for a second they're like, oh, the girl with the camera, I will never see them again. How important are they in my life? You know? And then I also have people like in Africa, one Mama Karen, shout out to you if you're listening. She's turning 60 this year and she came with us on our trip. Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
Such a badass. And she was like, are you an influencer? I'm like, no. She's like, but you just wave the camera, you make these videos and then magic happens.
Yeah.
You know? But and so
I think that gets, you get better at it.
You do.
With practice.
Yes.
Time. And you do it again and again and again and again. I mean, you get better at it.
And then people rely on you to capture moments because mm-hmm. they don't know how to, but they're like, you know how to do all this stuff.
Right.
I'm like, I'm just figuring it out. The only difference between you and me is that I'm doing it every day.
Right. And then you realize that, oh, I could figure that out. I can figure anything out. And then you realize that, oh, other people can figure things out.
Yeah.
They can figure anything out too.
Right.
And so that kind of increases my... It's a double-edged sword, really, mm-hmm. because I do think a lot of people, like, I think that part of what this phase of my life at the selfie room has done is help me just realize exactly how much I value each individual person.
And you make them feel that way, too.
Oh, good.
Everyone who knows you, who I've talked to, is like, oh, it's Heather!
No, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice. I don't necessarily feel that way about myself, but it's nice to hear.
Yeah.
But then the other edge of that sword is that I also get disappointed in people a lot because I feel like everyone's capable of doing certain things, but then don't or won't.
Right.
But then there's the next part of that whole thing, which is that I have no room to judge because I do the same thing.
Different areas.
There's a lot of things that I could do that I don't, mm-hmm. you know, or that I won't, that other people do that I wish I would. But, okay, here's the next step. We're just getting kind of like an insight into
how your
inner
works.
Workings. Yes, it's kind of scary.
Yeah.
But then the next step is, okay, Heather, why are you comparing yourself to other people? Because your journey is not theirs. Theirs is not yours. Your circumstances are different. Our inner workings, you know, our chemistry is different. Our history is different. There is no good that comes for me in comparing myself to others, usually. And so I try not to make general statements. Broad general statements without a caveat or a disclaimer, because I have also have learned that there are no absolutes. I think that my life has shown just it's been a huge pendulum swing
right.
of lessons. And I go this way, way too far this way, and then I overcorrect. Then I go this way too far. And then I feel like my whole goal in life is to find the center,
the piece
of the pendulum.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that just, but at the same time, even though we want that, mm-hmm. we have to grow. That's part of life. Mm-hmm. And so either you can take on challenges yourself or challenges will come whether you're ready or not because it's time for you to level up. Mm. So being able to like have that toolkit, I think, for peace will really serve you as you come to those because it's a practice. You know,
it's a long process,
constantly a practice,
and like it's a messy process.
I think the weirdest thing too is like once we overcome a challenge in our life, like for example, Kilimanjaro, a lot of people have been like cheesing out about it and like, that's so incredible, that's so amazing. And I'm like, yeah, but I did that like 6 weeks ago. Like, I'm done. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I did that. I remember when I tooted your horn for you at the last Babes in Business, because you just like glossed over it. Like, it's no big deal, but it's a huge deal. It's like, if you really thought about how many people in the United States have or ever will do what you did, it's the minutia. It's teeny tiny.
No, it's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be real. There's also people who have no zero interest, right? It's never going to be their thing that they want to do something like that. And then you have the people who are just chewing their heads about it. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't realize. And so a lot of people were like, oh, just another bucket list item. Like, I didn't realize that it was such a bucket list item for people and that there's like real climbers. Because I didn't train really. I just went for it. I was like, this sounds like a cool idea. So I was like telling people, I'm like, I don't really have bucket lists. I have ideas and then I just go for it, you know? And then I there's consequences for that as well.
Right.
But the plus side is that I get really cool experiences. Mm-hmm. Even if there are challenges, there's going to be challenges no matter how, like, there's no perfect way to train for anything. And I just didn't realize how many people dreamed about Kilimanjaro. And it's just something that I did. But now that I've done it, it's like, it's amazing and I'm reflective. But to be honest, I also do think I'm going through a little bit like a depression era. Mm-hmm. My uncle, who's a psychologist, warned me about this, where when you do something that amazing, you kind of just, real life just isn't enough.
It's,
if that makes sense.
Yeah. I've heard it called like the dump after like the emotional, you got this high and then that, you know.
Yeah.
But that's tough. I'm sorry.
But it's also just my personality. Like you said, like, I don't know. I know it's a big deal, but okay.
Yeah.
I did it.
You'll do more big things.
Yeah, I
will.
That's
for sure.
And that's my whole thing. I'm like, I did it. Now on to the next.
Yeah.
You know, like I did not just pink at 29. Like Kilimanjaro was just going to be part of my story.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, and I just love your guts to go for it.
It's the Aries.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Fire.
Yep.
Oh, you share that with Cece.
I sure do.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blast tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Season's greetings to you all from Menards. Who is having it? Wrote a book. Like, I just talked to her on the phone on the way here and how many things she's doing. She's and incredible. I'm doing so many different things too. And I think for me, it's more the ADHD than the side.
I have ADD
I'm
too.
I'm very Libra. Oh, dude. Yeah. Oh, my God. I was so grateful to get diagnosed with that officially, finally. When it happened, I was encouraged by an ex-girlfriend to go and get that done because I was driving her nuts.
Yeah.
And thank goodness, because it explained so many things that I had struggled with my whole life that I had just chalked up to moral failures. Like, I must not be good enough to be able to overcome that. Or because I can't stay organized on top of everything, you know, open mail, I must be a bad person. And so getting that diagnosis, the medication is still not
for you,
right for me.
But at least your behavior is explained.
Yeah. It was a relief. It wasn't. Yeah. It was, there's a reason for it, you know.
But, like, I'm not lazy or scatterbrained.
Yeah, I mean, I do identify with those two things too.
But that's the human in you, but it's not coming from an intentional place. Right. And it's not that you can't succeed, because I'm sure that when you hyper-focus on something, it's insane. Speaking of, I wanted to go into your backstory a little bit, because I want to talk about, well, I know there's so much to your story that I probably don't even know, but also like living abroad in China, how you got into Bitcoin, how you ended up using that to get this selfie room.
Oh my gosh, what you a remember story. That.
Dude, this is what I do. This is what I live for.
That's cool. So,
all the tea.
What do you want to know?
All the tea. Just
okay.
Yeah.
So I was married for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him at work. We both worked at a casino. And so for the longest time, I was in the casino industry. He still is. And but eventually I ended up in HR and I ended up being a trainer for leadership training and development. And I did that. I left the casino industry and then I continued to do that work for other companies. So eventually, though, so I was working, we were living in Alton, Illinois. I was working at Boeing, loving it, getting to train leaders all over the world.
All in HR?
Yes, for the in HR division, it was okay. Leadership development was the, worked at the Boeing Leadership Center, which was this gorgeous place. That people from all over the world would come to. We had a hotel, we had a state-of-the-art training facilities, you know, a giant restaurant with a, you know, amazing chef, and people would come and stay for a week at a time from all over the world. And I met the CEO, the CFO of all the different divisions of Boeing so many times. Anyways, that was really a feather in my cap for my career because I got, while I was there, I got to lead the team that created and developed the brand new leadership development program for all Boeing managers around the world. And so it was a 4-day immersive program. It took me to England and Australia and India and just getting to lead that team. That was a very pivotal moment for me. And I knew then after successfully completing that I could do anything. And I had spent all this time teaching, helping, really facilitating. Facilitation is a completely different skill than teaching. So we try to make sure that we focused on that. It was facilitating. Anyways, that's besides the point. And I know you'll edit that out, I hope. But anyway.
I won't, because I'll tell you why. I'm like processing what you're saying. And I like the idea. I've never heard anyone describe it that way, like facilitating versus teaching. Mm-hmm. Because facilitating means you're not just giving over skill set. You're like really making sure that those skills that you're teaching, they can run with it and do well, right?
That's part of it. It's also helping people find the knowledge and the skill they already have within themselves.
Well, like their strengths.
Yes. One of the things that we actually integrated into the leadership program was strengths. Finder, which is a book, and you take a survey and it helps you identify your top strengths. And there's a lot of them to choose from. And so we would have classes of 20 to 30 Boeing leaders from all over the world. I literally worked with rocket scientists.
That's so cool.
And but we would find our strengths and then we would write each one of them on a sheet of paper, and then we got very elementary sometimes. We got very physically involved because a lot of facilitation is about enabling the learning, right? It's not taking what I know and passing it on to you. It's about creating experiences where people's ability can be demonstrated. And it's like a proving to themselves. A lot of facilitation is leading people to their own aha moment.
Yeah.
Basically. But anyway, so we would put our words on the wall and it would be like this huge wall of all these different strengths made up of leaders, because no one leader can provide everything to a team. So that's why teams and diversity is so important. Not only diversity, but equity and inclusion is so important, because in all different areas, because we all bring something different to the table.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you only rely on your own skills, you're going to short yourself and your team.
100%.
Anyway, while I was doing that, my husband moved to Las Vegas.
Okay.
And got a job there as an executive in one of the casino companies out there. And then, but I stayed in St. Louis and we did long distance for a while.
It was
fabulous. No.
Really?
It was the best years of my marriage.
Really? Okay.
Right, yes. Were you at the Babes in Business that we had here?
Yeah.
Right? Where yeah. everybody was like, I love my husband. I love my husband.
I'm yeah, like, and you're like, I'm happily divorced.
Happily divorced. 4 years. Anyway, so eventually I found a job. Things changed at Boeing. I found a job in Vegas that I was willing to move out there for. And we had a house there, house in Alton. And then finally we sold the house here, packed up everything, and I moved to Vegas and started my job there. About 4 months after moving to Las Vegas, my husband, a headhunter, got in touch with him about a job in Macau, which is like the Vegas of Asia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the way I describe is if you look on a map, I had to look on a map to see where is this?
Like, where are we going?
It's yeah. like you look at Hong Kong and go, it's to the left of Hong Kong.
Okay.
Basically, which is in Southeast Asia. Southeast China. Sorry. So yeah, 4 months after I moved to Vegas, I quit my brand new job and he moved to Macau. I packed up everything. We sold the house in Vegas. I moved back to St. Louis for a while until I moved out to China and I lived there. I didn't have a job. I left my career. Mm. I just moved to Vegas. I moved to China. And I was excited.
Yeah.
I was really excited.
Like, was this your first time living abroad?
Yes.
Okay.
It was traveling my first abroad? Time in Asia. No, okay. I had been to England and Australia.
Okay.
I'd been to England a few times and Australia once for work. And it was the best time of my life. Mm. I got to hold a koala.
No way.
Okay, it was amazing. So cool. It was the best day ever.
That's on my travel list.
Oh, yeah. There. It was amazing. And the kangaroos, like the first time I was in a taxi from the airport to the where I was going for work, and I just saw a kangaroo out in the wild, and I freaked out.
You're
the
like
taxi
real.
Driver was like, it's okay. It's like they don't have squirrels, so they think it's really cool to see a squirrel.
That's wild. Oh, my God. We take for granted, like, what's yeah, cool about where we live,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. So living in China was amazing. It just meant that I was on my own without a job and a lot more time with my ex-husband. And it wasn't great.
Okay.
But I found a community of expats. I tried to learn Chinese. I did not.
It's a hard language.
Oh, my goodness. It's amazing.
It's Mandarin, right?
No, in the South, it's Cantonese.
Cantonese, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's interesting, though, because like one thing I learned is that you end a statement with la. That's almost like the period. Mm-hmm. And then if you're asking a question, it like you end with a. And that's kind of like the question mark. And so sometimes like if I text with people over there, it would be like, okay, la. And so when I came over, start saying, okay, la. And people are like, what are you saying? Or if I text it, people are like, okay, LA. Like, no.
Yeah, I see. That's so funny. Just little cultural differences.
Yeah.
So how long were you in China for?
I was there for about a year and a half.
Okay.
While I was there, COVID started. Mm. And then I decided it was a lot of things came together.
What was that like being in China during COVID?
Well, it was bizarre because we didn't know it was going to be what it was.
No one did, right?
Right. When I was there, it was Wuhan disease.
Right. Right. Oh my gosh. Wow. Blast of the past.
Uh huh.
Okay.
Yeah. And I remember the first case that showed up in China in Macau. And it was in 2019.
Okay, yeah, because they hit there early. It was first there.
It was first there.
Right.
Yeah. So it was 2019. And then 2020, Chinese New Year was canceled, literally.
That's a big deal.
It's the biggest deal. It's the biggest celebration of the year for the biggest population on the planet.
Mm.
And so it was bizarre. It was like apocalypse, you know, weird movie scene time over there.
Yeah.
Like the streets were quiet and there was no one out on the streets and there were cars driving around with a speaker going on, please get indoors.
Wow.
Do not step outside.
That's so weird.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But while I was over there, I did get to go to Vietnam. I went to Bali. Bali. I went to Bali. It was incredible.
Okay.
If I could go back, I would go back. The only problem is I went with my husband.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
We ended up with a fight, whatever, you know, but the place was incredible. Yeah. I would go back in a minute. And then we went to Shanghai, which was incredible too. I just loved it. The people were wonderful. They were all so friendly and so happy to help and so just excited to meet Americans. But I'll tell you what, it was interesting because I am not a small American even. And I'm in Asia where the average stature of a person is smaller in frame.
Yeah, they're tiny.
Than even like an average American. And everybody has stick straight black hair and they're, you know, I stuck out like a giant swollen infected. I was pink. I was large and pink. And I had like red hair.
Hair was red. I didn't know you had red hair. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine. Well, actually, that would be really pretty with your eyes.
Oh, thanks. Well, okay. I just went blonde like a few years ago to camouflage the gray hair that's coming.
Smart.
Yeah, it helps. But yeah, I had red hair and I was giant. You know, I was like pink and I'm on the bus and I'm walking down the street and I'm trying to fit into taxi cabs. And yeah, it was just interesting because I started to feel for the first time in my life as a privileged white American, what it feels like to be the only one who looks like you in a crowd.
That's how I felt when I was in Africa.
It's amazing.
It's a weird feeling.
The insight you get about what it must feel like because you finally get a moment in someone else's shoes. Now, I'm not saying it's anywhere near like what Black people go through in this country.
No, it's different.
It's different. It's a tiny, tiny taste of just not the discrimination, not the like, you know, the
negative
animosity. Yes.
It's just more of feeling different.
Yeah. And that's just a tiny taste. And so I'm grateful for that. But anyways, a lot of things came together. I worked really hard to save my marriage. I was very dedicated. I never thought I would get divorced. I got sober during my marriage.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I am very proud of that. That was a huge accomplishment, something I never thought I would do. I don't talk about it a lot with people just in my regular, like just outside of recovery. I don't talk about it really because I just, if people want to know about it, we can talk about it. But a lot of things came together and I decided I knew it was time to leave. And I was in China and I had like sold our house. We'd sold our house. We had a house. We sold the Alton house. We sold the Vegas house. We sold our cars. I left my career and I had to come home. And sorry.
No, it's okay.
It's a lot. I didn't think I would get emotional about this, but it was really hard. And, I still have some like resentments towards him. He was surprised, but which is crazy because he shouldn't have been, because I talked with him many times about how unhappy I was and what we needed to do. And I worked so hard and I just asked him to do a few couple of things and he just never would. But anyways, I like bought a plane ticket without him knowing to come home. And it was December of 2020.
Okay.
And the pandemic, COVID had come back. Like it was good in Asia for a while it was running rampant over here.
Right.
And then it kind of flared back up over in Asia again. And so I got like one of the last flights out of Macau to the United States in December. And, Yeah, he found out that I bought the plane ticket, and he wasn't supposed to until like the night before I left, just because I didn't want him to talk me out of it. But he
Once
did
you
find
made up
out,
your mind,
and I was
ready.
Like, yeah, I moved into the other bedroom. I packed things while he was at work, and he was never like physically abusive. He was emotionally abusive, and that's hard to talk about.
Right. But you're very strong because you left, and I know how hard that can be.
Yeah.
Especially, like, I know a lot of women who left for their kids but would not have left for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to take a moment for you to say that that is so powerful, and that shows so much self-love, even if you feel like that's something you struggle with.
Yeah.
That alone is so huge.
I chose me.
Yeah.
I chose me.
That's really amazing.
Thank you. And I hope that it can help other women do that, you know, and that's why I talk about it, because I do want women to know.
And you stayed sober through that, too.
I did.
Which is also huge.
Thank you. And I still have an amazing relationship with my stepdaughter, who I love. And, I still stay in touch with her. But I did lose all the rest of my in-laws, which I had been family with for 20 years.
Yeah, I don't think people talk about that enough, where it's like, they say, like, in a negative light, you don't just marry the guy, you marry his family, right? Mm-hmm. Or vice versa.
Yeah.
But in a positive way, sometimes the partner was the problem, or,
I loved them.
Yeah.
I miss them still.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no.
That's really hard.
Yeah.
But you have to choose you at
the end of the
day.
And what a
wild time in history to, like, you know.
So I did get on this plane, and I come back to the United States, and I have just two suitcases and a carry-on and my backpack. And that's it.
Mm.
I have no house, no car, no job.
But in a weird way, that's kind of nice, because you didn't have to worry about, like, in the divorce, like, splitting up assets, because you
guys... Oh, no, we did.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. That's just what I was able to come home with.
Got it.
I had packed a bunch of boxes of my stuff, but we had also downsized.
Right.
So when we moved from Illinois to Vegas, we got rid of like
right,
half of
saying.
Our stuff.
That helped probably a lot.
And then when we moved back from Vegas, you know, to China, we got rid of even more stuff.
Right. You know, it's crazy because, like, obviously this is your life. This is, like, real stuff. But it's, like, it's kind of, like, similar to what we were talking about, like, with the mountain climb earlier. Like, you know, if you were another person listening to your story, you'd be like, this is out of a movie. Like, leaving, like, there was a world pandemic and you're getting a divorce and you're in the process of, like, still, like, with your sobriety. And, like, that's still a challenge. And, like, I'm sure... that was really challenging because you would want to lean towards that, but you're choosing yourself on so many levels, and then coming back here and with like a backpack and just like, a, you know, like that's such a wild hero's journey right there.
And coming out.
So that's when you came out too. Okay. Okay. Are you like out? Or are you like bi?
I'm bi.
Okay.
I'm
bummed. Do you love how I went like that? Yes. I'm like, is it?
But
is
I've
it a
discovered
thing?
That. I've learned that over time. Because, like, after having this desire to be with women for my whole life, but never having opportunity to act on it, when I left my husband, I was like, I'm gay. I'm a lesbian. That's it. There's no more men for me. No more. I'm done. Done, 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 done.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to be with women. And I still am. But after a couple of relationships, a couple of lesbian relationships, I just kind of like decided it was time for Heather to sow her wild oats. And I have been on this journey of discovering my own pleasure for the last year, almost 2 years. And I've been exploring, and I've been on lots of dates with lots of people. And I have started to embrace that I'm attractive to some people. Not everyone, but I've always gone my whole... That was one of my biggest problems in my marriage. Like, I never felt like my husband was attracted to me.
Mm.
And I begged him at times to just tell me I'm beautiful, please. Even if it's a lie.
And you shouldn't even have to ask.
Right. So.
Yeah.
You know.
Meanwhile, you should know that I've literally had people tell me that you're beautiful.
Who? you've told you about that I am?
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. That's crazy.
Just so you know.
No, that's bizarre. But it didn't matter. See, that's the thing. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I don't believe it. Self-esteem. No one can love you for you. You have to love who you see in the mirror.
Yeah. But here's the thing I've learned in recovery.
Okay.
I have had to. The biggest changes come when I act my way into right thinking. I can't necessarily think my way into right acting. It's almost like if
you have
I
to
do it,
embody.
I have to just do it.
Yes.
And then the confidence comes.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Yes. That makes sense. Alex Hormozi is one of my favorite entrepreneurs.
Me too. Did you buy his new book? Did you watch his book launch on Saturday? It was...
Well, that's Shabbos, my dear. Huh? Orthodox Jew over here.
Oh,
well, Jewish.
Saturday. Right.
You know, yeah. Saturday is my day. That's my non-negotiable.
No, I love that about you.
So it's that's another thing we'll get into, but that's been really hard.
And we're back. And we are back in a new scene because it wouldn't be a trip to the selfie room without getting the best of all the worlds. So my goal is to go into 3 different locations. So we are now currently in location number 2.
Which it combines 2 different scenes.
Yeah.
So this one we call the boho.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the hum.
Well.
It's a neutral scene, which is nice because there's a lot of color in the selfie room.
Yeah, there is.
And sometimes people want to just have a little bit of a...
muted space.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I love that flower wall.
This feels very bridal.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of bridal.
Yeah.
But I'm so far from bridal ideas of anything, honestly.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. Just talking about life in general, we were just left off where you said you officially came out and you were on your pleasure journey.
Oh, thank you for reminding me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have discovered that I'm bye.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
And I'm not looking for a relationship. I'm not. I am happy. I am happily single, and I am happily enjoying the company of different people.
Yeah.
I don't want to date or, yeah, I am too busy. This is my relationship right now.
100%.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of, well, specifically men, because I am straight, so that's all I talk to. And I don't go searching for men who are older. They come for me. But
well, that's good, though, I think, older men.
I don't like older men.
Oh, you don't?
Respectfully. My perspective is this. My dad is 14 years older than my mom, right? And so now she's not going to say her age, but because, you know, respect for my mom and all that. But she's, God willing, she's doing well, right? Health-wise, she's really taking care of herself. She's still, like, kicking it, right? But, like, my dad's not doing well. And watching her the past, like, 10-ish years be his, like, caretaker. And so it's just, like, for me, I used to always think that it's interesting because they say, like, you almost look for a man, if you're looking for a man, that's, like your dad or like your brothers, right? And so my dad used to be like very old school, stoic and all that. So I used to really like intense guys who were older and mature and were very ambitious and like knew what they wanted and went after it heart and soul. Mm-hmm. But when my dad got dementia, my mom calls it the clear dementia, because in his early stages, he was so sweet. And he was always telling her how beautiful she was, how much he loved her, wanting to hold her hand, give her kisses, like all these things.
Oh.
All the affection that women just like really want.
Yes.
But men are like, oh, but I'm providing for you, so you must know that means I love you, right? And we're like, we appreciate it. But that love and affection is something we're so starved for and we need. Even the tiniest little things go so much further than men realize.
And so my mom's like, dementia saved their marriage because just this sweet side of him came out. Mm-hmm. And then what's interesting is now my type of man that I like is changed. I like golden retriever types who are like really sweet and like are cutie patooties, not necessarily baddies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like guys who are really sweet and who adore me and cherish me and worship the ground that I walk on.
Yes.
You know, like that's just what I love. Like, part of going to Istanbul and Africa was the way that the men treated me over there healed me.
Mm.
When I tell you that I wanted for nothing and they just like,
yay. I'm happy for you.
It was so great.
Yeah.
And like, even let's say when we were going down the mountain, like even them just like my guide, Ellie, like extending his hand for me to like hold his hand.
Mm-hmm.
He thought it was going to be for a little bit. We ended up just holding hands the whole way down.
You know, like, don't let go, Ellie. I'm going to die. That's adorable.
And then I got to the campsite. Like, the men would, like, untie our shoes and, like, wouldn't just, like, open our tents for us and set everything up.
Oh, gosh. That's so unlike my experience.
Oh, really?
Like, with my ex-husband.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, it was just, like, he didn't even know to, like, walk on the outside of the sidewalk. On the street side. He didn't know that.
There's men who don't realize that.
He would walk through doors before me.
No.
And let it close.
No.
I mean, I put up with, but what I learned is that I have a very high tolerance for abuse.
What I'm curious.
That's not good. I don't want people, I don't want to be like that anymore.
Right.
And this is part of the pendulum swing that I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, I also don't want to over, you know, become over independent and just,
correct,
you know.
Right, because we do best when we're in loving relationships, I think.
Yeah.
But the question is, and this is a humbling point that I've come to realize, is that a lot of people can be interested in you, but that's not the same thing as being chosen.
Yes.
And there's a difference. There's a certain doting, if you will. And that's my standard. And so because of that, I've gotten to a point where it's like, of course I want these things, but I'm really just being present and have a lot of peace in where I'm at and just trusting that it's, if it's meant for me, it will come.
That's
for
so
me.
Nice.
And I know energetically, like, especially women, a lot of women will go out in like heterosexual relationships. Let's say they'll go out and they'll be like letting the guy know that they want to go out with him. They're really pursuing the relationship. And I've seen some of those girls marry those men.
Yes.
But I don't like the energy dynamic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a different energy dynamic when the guy chooses you versus when you choose him.
Yeah, I don't know. That is not something I ever have had the experience with. I was not experienced in dating before I met my husband. I was always just not asked out. You know, I don't know. I just had a couple of boyfriends here and there, but not really, didn't ever date. So I ended up being married. But it was like we chose each other, feeling, you know, I really did love him. I was attracted to a lot of the things that I didn't have in a dad. So it's funny that you talked about that because, so my childhood, like my dad left us twice, like not just once. When I was in kindergarten, one day I left for school and he was out front and his car was all packed and me and my little brother were getting ready to walk to school. Maybe I was in first grade and John was in kindergarten. But dad was out front, his car was packed, and he gave me a kiss. He was like, come here, kids, give me a kiss, goodbye. I'm like, okay, bye, dad. Just thinking, you know, we were going to go to school and come home just like every other day. But this day we came home and dad, we didn't have a dad anymore.
Oh my God.
He was gone, just left. And mom was crying. She was telling us what had happened. And yeah, he just disappeared from our life. And then, I mean, he came back and visited once, but he didn't ever, like, help out or send money or call or visit. We didn't have, like, he didn't have custody or anything like that. He just, like, moved. And then several years later, I'm in junior high and I get home from school and mom's talking to my dad on the phone. And I'm like, well, that's odd. And then she hands me the phone and she's like, your dad wants to talk to you. I'm like, what? Weird. Okay. I don't know why, but I hadn't talked to him in years.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets on the phone. He's like, hey, how are you doing? Good, whatever. I need you to, I'm in junior high, so things are awkward anyways.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, I need you to help your mom out around the house a little bit. And I'm like, who
who are you?
Yeah, literally.
To tell me, like, you're not a dad, you're not a father. Like, why are you telling me what to do, how I should be? So I just kind of forgot about it. But then another year later, they got back together. And then we moved out from St. Louis to the East Coast.
Wow.
To be with him, where he, to move in with him, where he had moved to. And my mom stayed very close with my dad's whole family. And so a bunch of my dad's family, we all moved from St. Louis out to the East Coast together. It was just really bizarre, but it was fun, you know? So we had a good time and it was like a caravan, and we all moved out there, like his mom and dad and one of his brothers, me, my mom, my brother. And then we moved in with my dad. I hated him. I didn't speak to him for like a couple of months that we lived together. I was like 13 now. We were in an East Coast city, like Ocean City, Maryland. And it was my first time ever seeing the ocean, and it was amazing. But I was so angry and I so hated everything and everyone in the world. I hated the ocean. I hated the beach. I hated sand.
Oh, wow.
So anyways, we're there. A couple years go by and dad leaves again. And that was it. I was just like, I hate him, you know? So we couldn't afford to stay there with mom's working alone salary. And of course he's still not helping. And so we moved back to St. Louis and we moved in with my mom's mom and sister. And that was hard. And by then I had really liked the beach and I really started to have fun out there. But I had also started drinking when I was 13.
Wow.
Yeah. Have my first blackout drunk at 13.
That's crazy. But you're a baby.
Yeah. I think about it now. If I had, you know, my daughter was 13, I would have like died. No wonder my mom was so upset. But anyways, it wasn't that big of a deal. There was like drinking was a major part of my whole family's like life.
It's interesting how like when I hear people who drink, it's like a lot of it has to do with your environment too, right? Because for me, I'm not a big drinker. And it's funny because when I tell people I don't drink, the first question they'll ask me is be like, oh, are you sober? You know? And I'm like, no, I just never – it wasn't really the environment that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And when I started my first job, obviously happy hours became more of a thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so like I kind of indulged a little bit, but I've always been someone who doesn't really like to not know what's happening and where I am and like acting in a way that I'm going to regret. Mm-hmm. And I started 75 Hard when I was 23 for the first time.
You started what?
75 Hard. Are you familiar with this?
No.
So Andy Frisella, the founder of Supplement Superstores and First Form, he has this challenge called 75 Hard. So for 75 days, there's 5 tasks that you do, which are very, very challenging, but it's like a reset. So the first one is you have to follow a diet. Doesn't matter what diet it is, but like no desserts, no cheating, like nothing, whatever diet you choose. You have to drink a gallon of water a day. You have to work out twice a day for 45 minutes each. One of them must be outdoors. And they can't be like consecutive. There has to be like spaced out, like a morning and an afternoon or evening one. And like one of them could be like stretching outside or like yoga. It doesn't have to be intense.
Oh, okay.
But you
– something.
The more you put into it, the more you're going to get, right? And then you have to read 10 pages of a nonfiction book. And along with the diet, there's also no drinking. And then there's also taking a selfie every day.
Really?
To track progress. Because when you do a montage at the end of the 75 days, like you think day in, you're not really seeing things. It's incremental. But over the course of 75 days, if you stick with it, you see it. And the rule of the challenges is that even if you miss one thing, you have to start over. No. There's no exceptions, right? Like you have to, if you're in it, you're in it.
Yeah.
And so it's really – and then he goes and he has a book about like explaining why.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Season's greetings to you all from the Nards. He has each.
each That's of those great. Things.
It's a commitment.
It's a commitment. And mm-hmm. so I did it and I realized that I didn't need to drink to be social.
Yes.
Like I could still show up, right?
Yeah.
And then I realized a few things too, which was if I need a drink to be with you, to enjoy your company, I don't like you very much, you yes. know? Like, I should be able to vibe. Yeah.
But, that's so funny.
So there's that. That's just, it's nice to be aware, right? You know, like, I'm not drinking and I yeah. either really enjoy your company or I really don't. And if I really don't, that's okay. Like, I don't yeah. need to like everyone.
Yes.
But at the same time, social skills is a skill and it's something that could be built. And like we were talking earlier about like leadership development, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in immersion therapy. And so whatever mm-hmm. makes you uncomfortable within reason, the more you do it, the better you'll get.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, this is, if I feel uncomfortable in social situations, then I need to be present, sober in more social situations until right. I learn how not to be so nervous.
Yeah.
Staying at home isn't going to make me better. And nope. drinking isn't the solution. I right. didn't want something external.
Yes.
Choosing how social I am.
See, it's interesting because I, while we've been talking, I've been thinking about how you're almost 30.
Correct. Wow.
And I'll be 51 okay. in October. And 20 years ago, 30 at 30.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about these things.
Really?
Not at all. No.
Interesting.
No. It is amazing to me how much more common and accepted it is to talk amongst your contemporaries and your generation. And I'm going to say it, your generation, because I'm Gen X. I'm solid Gen X.
Yeah, I'm at the cusp. Like, I'm... Depending on who you talk to, I'm either just at the edge of a millennial or I'm the elder Gen X.
You mean Z?
Gen Z.
Yeah, the elder Gen Whatever. Z.
Yeah.
Well,
because you're Gen X.
I'm Gen X.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
you're like, you're not an elder Gen X.
No. My daughter is 27 and she's millennial.
No, she's not. If she's 27, she's a Gen Z.
Oh, well, I always thought she was millennial.
I think everyone kind of dumps them together, but it's,
yeah,
there is a difference.
Yeah.
On Kilimanjaro, I actually was aware of my age for the first time because Mother Nature is a reflection of who you are. And like, we're very comfortable. I heard a comedian talk about this. He's like, America is the only place where you have to tell yourself that it's okay to be uncomfortable. He's like, yes. No other country in the world is like, you know what we should do? We should work on being uncomfortable. They're like, that's our state of being. But you guys are so comfortable. You have to work on being uncomfortable.
That's a very good point.
You know?
That's a very good point. And that's why I have learned a lot of people, I drank. I was uncomfortable in my own skin.
Right.
And that was my external like solution.
Right.
To being uncomfortable.
And in a certain way, drinking probably brought out a lot of who you were without any inhibitions, right? Mm-hmm. And so then all of a sudden, I know you as you are. You have such a like vivacious, like charming, warm personality. I can see how like you probably were just off the charts.
Obnoxious.
And then everyone was like, you're the best person. Like, you're so fun.
I was fun. I was obnoxious, but then the depression part of me would kick in. I would cry a lot, but I have had clinical depression since I was in college and severe clinical depression. And so I still go through it. Like literally just about a month ago, I was in a depressive episode and I'm medicated and I've been in therapy for a long time. It's been a long time since I've seen a therapist right now currently, but it's hard. It makes life very hard. It makes it difficult to have any kind of life. It's difficult. Just getting out of bed and making it out the door is monumentally challenging.
So I'm curious, because I've experienced depression. I don't have clinical depression. So there's things that you're saying that I could obviously relate to, but it's very different than being like on medication and dealing with it on such a severe level, right? That's my uncle and I, the one who I told you about, who told me about the depression thing after Kilimanjaro.
Mm-hmm.
He actually went into that on our episode together where I'm like, I think our generation overuses the word, oh, I have anxiety. Oh, I have depression.
Oh, honey.
You know,
I 100% agree
with you. Takes away from
your
experience for real and lessens people's reaction to you
because they're like, oh yeah, I'm depressed too. And you're like, not the same. We're not built the same.
Yeah. But at the same time, like I said, we didn't talk about it. So I don't want to minimize your ability to express that.
But I think words are powerful. And mm-hmm. so for example, as someone who is not clinically depressed, but has experienced depression, mm-hmm. there's a difference in terms of how I'm going to handle it if I say, mm-hmm. oh, I have depression.
Versus I'm depressed.
I am feeling depressed. Not yes. I am depressed. I am feeling depressed. Feelings are fleeting, but mm. having depression is mm-hmm. something that you truly mm-hmm. have to work
yeah,
with,
and I feel the same about things like with OCD. Like I don't have OCD, and I think a lot of people overuse
because real that OCD is terrifying.
Real OCD, exactly. But if people are like, oh, I like to keep things in order. You know, and if it's not in order, then I'm irritated. That's not
different. You're organized. OCD. You're clean. Yeah.
Yes. Or you have perfectionist, you know, qualities or tendencies.
Tendencies. Yeah.
Yes.
So my question for you is I know for myself that when I've got my routines in check, even if I enter into a phase where I'm feeling maybe more depressed, it helps me. Like movement is medicine, right? Like having those things. Mm. For you, is that kind of the same thing or totally not?
You know, Nahama.
I'm just curious. I've never had a
it's okay. No, it's funny because I was just thinking about routine yesterday yeah. morning on my drive into work because it is something that I have desired to have.
Because you also have ADHD.
My whole life. I right. have a very good case of ADD. And I try to embrace the positives of it rather than only focus on the negatives of it. But what I have started to just now realize is that just because I've never been able to have a routine except for getting sober. It's the only thing I've ever done that I still do and have stuck with. But even the things within sobriety, I don't do regularly. Like there are people who have a daily morning reading they do. I don't do that. You know, there's nothing that I've ever been able to stick. But when I do something that feels really good for like
hyper-focus.
A week, no, I just really love it. And I say to myself, I'm going to do this every morning forever. It feels so good. And then it lasts for however long it lasts, and then it doesn't, and then it changes. And I kind of like maybe have come to a place where acceptance where I don't know that I'll ever have routine. And I don't know that if I can do routine. I don't know if I can. And I have to decide if that makes me a bad person.
That doesn't make you a bad person.
Or if it makes me feel like incapable of achieving certain things in my life. Like,
yeah, I think it comes more down to goals, right? I mean, you know all about this from your background.
From the learning, from teaching it. But to live it and to teach it are two different things.
100%. I think that's also going back to our very early conversation about like judging others. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we judge others, because it gives us almost like a little vacation from our own life.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Objectively, when you're not dealing with any emotions or back end stuff or depression or anything like that, you can be like, yeah, girl, just get up at 6 a.m., go to the gym, do this by this time, here's the perfect morning routine, right? Mm-hmm. Objectively, it's easy to say that, but it's like at the end of the day, my mom and I have been talking about this in terms of like health, what's going to work for you? Because that's what you're going to stick to.
I haven't found anything that I can stick to ever.
Right. So it's interesting because you might actually do well with small challenges.
Right.
You know
so
what I
that's
mean?
That's it. Exactly.
Like,
right.
It
has to
Pilates,
change.
Like home Pilates for 7 days or 75 yes. hard and then moving on to something like
that.
Yeah, that
sounds very doable. Like that sounds fun. It's challenging. Right. I need change. Right. I like fast paced.
So that's not a negative thing. It's just more about how do you make it work for you?
Yeah. Lifelong challenge.
Yeah, but that's okay. And the way I see it too is like what was, what will be, what season you're in right now.
Sarah, Sarah.
I love that.
I do too.
But it's just, you know, I mean,
whatever.
Not to sound so woo-woo and whatnot, but that's just where I'm at in life, where I'm like, it is what it is. You can't force things. Mm-hmm. All you have is really today. So, like, how can today be the best day ever? Like, what would make that feel good
yes.
for you?
And when I'm in a depressive episode, that changes. It does. It's not that I change, like, what can I do to make today the best day ever? It's like, how can I get through today?
And that's okay too.
Yeah, that's the best I can do that day. And so accepting that about myself and letting go of judging myself against these standards that I find that, again, yeah. Like, this takes us back to what I had told you about wanting to talk about with social media and the challenges with social media and how depressing it can be to get on there day after day, all day, as a part of your job, and mm-hmm. start comparing. It's almost impossible to not compare yourself to other people or their businesses, in my case.
They're all not doing great. Sorry.
Well, but that's not what it looks like.
Right. Of course not.
If you look at people, look at my social media, which, by the way, I have come, when I bought this business in 2023, the person I bought it from, like, I swear to God, she rolled her eyes at me because I asked her, what's the difference between a story and a reel and a post? I didn't know.
Okay, let's back up a little bit and dive into that story, right? Because you said you got into Bitcoin. So at what point did you get into Bitcoin?
So that was after I moved back to the United States.
Okay.
From Asia and my divorce. And I still didn't go back to corporate America. I didn't want to. It was
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
It was the pandemic still, right? So it's early 2021. And my younger brother, who was living in France at the time, I don't know, like rehabbing some old house, met somebody who told him that, oh, Heather, Bitcoin's at a great price right now. You should buy some. I'm going to. He's not a Bitcoin person. He's like an artist and a musician. So it just made me curious. And so I looked into it and then I got curious. And then I started to teach myself everything I could find out about it.
Classic.
From the very, basics. Like, what is blockchain? What does that mean? How does it work? What does it do? Why does it exist?
Yeah.
And then what is Bitcoin? What's the difference between Bitcoin and blockchain? And how does a Bitcoin come into existence? What does it mean to mine a Bitcoin?
So briefly, like, what is that answer?
Which?
All.
Okay. So.
Just like an overview, because obviously that's pretty in depth.
Okay. So blockchain is where transactions, it's like a ledger. So you have a transaction. You have a series of transactions. And there is a certain number of transactions that once you hit that number, it's sealed into a block and it can't be changed. And then that block of data gets attached to the next block. And then when that block is full, it starts a new block of data, of transactions.
Okay.
And that's the blockchain. Okay, so transactions on the blockchain, like I said, are you can't change them. They're there. They're locked. It's open. That's the other thing that's really interesting about this, that people, I think it's hard to understand the benefit of this, but it's open source, which means no one owns it. No government, no entity, no company. It's open source. Anyone with a computer and the ability to go and look up this information can see transactions that happened on the blockchain. So if somebody buys something and someone else tries to lie about it and say, no, that's mine, there's proof that anyone in the world can see. Bitcoin is a unit of value, like gold. So if you buy an ounce of gold, you don't have that gold, right? Mm-hmm. You're just like, I own 100 ounces of gold. Where? Well, I don't know. I bought it from somebody on the computer and they hold it somewhere. I don't know. I've never seen it. But Bitcoin is the same. And you can use Bitcoin to make purchases for anything anywhere in the world instantly. And so people in places like Africa who don't have access to a bank account or an ID or, you know, credit cards, if they have Bitcoin, anybody can have Bitcoin. You can have a wallet. And you store electronically your Bitcoin or bit of a Bitcoin in your wallet, you can use that to purchase anything from anywhere in the world instantly. And so the way that it's mined, though, is very interesting because it requires a bunch of people from all over the world to be working on solving equations. And once a certain equation is solved, then a Bitcoin is mined, is created.
Okay.
But they're made across nodes around the world. So you could mine Bitcoin if you wanted to. You would just need to buy a computer and it would become a node that has the ability to run and try to process and solve these equations.
Okay.
And once you solve the equation that's next, it generates a piece of the Bitcoin. And then you own it, and it's yours, and you can sell it, or you can. So when I bought it, my search started buying Bitcoin. It was at $32,000 per Bitcoin. I only bought a part. You can buy like 0.001 of a Bitcoin, right? So when I started buying it, I would do daily cost average. I learned this, and I watched people, and like I learned about all the crypto then, because Bitcoin is just like the entry level. And then there's Ethereum, and then there's XRP, and then there's like da da da. Then there's meme coins like Dogecoin. You start to learn, hear about Doge, and we heard all about that, you know, with Elon. But that's called a meme coin. But it's created, it's fabricated, you know, out of thin air. The only value it has is what people give to it. So I own some Doge because like several years ago, I thought, oh, this is fun. It was very cheap. It's still very cheap, but it might turn into something someday, you know? So it's kind of like gambling. It's kind of like doing the stock market. It's kind of like trading or collecting on the crypto, the coins, but not with Bitcoin. Bitcoin becomes a value. Like at one point I was able to, so the price of Bitcoin when I bought it was like 36,000, and it kept, as soon as I started buying it, it went down, and I was like, crap, I'm losing money. But I realized, no, the history of Bitcoin, it has outperformed every asset that's ever existed, ever, consistently, and continues to. And so I just kept buying as the price went down. They call it buy the dip. Right.
Yeah.
And the cheapest it was when I was buying, it was 18,000. So at one point it went down from $36,000 to $18,000 a Bitcoin. And I was buying and buying. And then the price kept going up. And by the time I was ready to buy this place, it was 42,000 a Bitcoin. So I had made all that money, especially when I was buying it at 18. So I found this place. I wanted to buy a business to like have a regular income, because I didn't want to go back to corporate America. I tried that after coming back. I did like a remote job for 4 months for General Dynamics, and it was awful. And the politics were still there, and the micromanaging was still there. La, la, la. So I was like, I'm going to buy a business. And then I was going to buy like a laundromat, car wash, I don't know. Yeah. And then I found this listing for this place, and I had come to visit it with my best friend, and it was way better than I thought it was going to be, the experience, because I didn't want to buy it if I didn't come and see what it was like.
Totally.
It's so much fun, but it's more than fun. Like what we very first started talking about during this interview with your experience, what happened to you here, is what I see that can happen to so many people here. Right. They find their own empowerment.
But it's through your facilitation.
Well, but it's not lucrative. So what I did was I sold like 2 Bitcoin to be able to buy this place. And I still have a loan that I'm paying off. And it's still, I am still... So now Bitcoin, when I sold it, it was at 42. When I bought this place, it's at over $100,000 of Bitcoin now.
That's crazy.
I sold 2 of them. If I hadn't sold my Bitcoin and bought this place, I would be sitting on over $250,000.
Oh my God.
In Bitcoin. Instead of being in debt and making no money.
Right.
But I have this relationship. I kind of continue to look at what has happened as like my education in my, I'm getting an MBA. I'm paying for an MBA.
No way.
You know, but
that's so cool.
It's not great. I still most days wish I had a 2 Bitcoin, but the experience that I'm getting, like you talked about diving into new challenges or we create new challenges or difficulties. This has been difficult. This has been incredibly difficult. One of the most difficult things I've ever done in my life is run this business. I thought that it would be so different. I thought it would be so much easier. This is not easy.
Yeah. Being an entrepreneur is the hardest.
Yeah. I thought I had a lot of experience under my belt. I had done a lot of hard things. Yeah. I already had, you know? And I'm not dumb. So I was like, I can figure this out. It's going to be great.
Well, speaking on back to Alex Hormozi again, he talks about how with most businesses, it takes like 10 years before you really start to see that success, that easiness that you're talking about, you know? And like confidence comes from irrefutable proof from your actions.
And which getting good at it takes repetition.
Correct.
That's one thing I love about Alex. When I think about what I need to do to be successful, I think about doing the reps. You got to do the reps and quit thinking about, is this going to like return, you know, am I going to see the results immediately? No, you're not.
You're not.
Like 75 days later, you'll see the results, but you don't see it while you're doing it. And so you have to put in the
That's
reps.
Why the gym is used as an analogy for everything,
mm.
you know, and going back to like, I also think I'm still processing Africa, obviously, but I think part of the reason why I'm not so like, woo on talking about it is that like I posted a few reels and everyone's like, oh my gosh, amazing, this is so cool, you're so epic, you're so wow. It was so fucking hard, and it's like I know what shape I'm in. I try at the gym, could I try harder? Sure, we all could, but like at the same time, like because of my schedule, there was only so much training I was really able to do. And even just emotionally, like just with everything going on in my life, like finding time at the gym, if I could find 45 minutes a day, that was a win for me. But that's not a win for Mother Nature, because that's what I was telling you about nature. When you go out into nature, there is no, oh, but sweetie, you tried. Here's a participation trophy.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
No, it's Mother Nature does not care. Fittest. You either do or you don't. You either make it or you don't.
You do or you die. It's survival of the fittest. I lost a toenail.
It's and not permanent though, right?
It will grow back, hopefully.
Okay, good.
I'm taking Mary Ruth's multivitamin.
That's why you're not wearing open toe shoes.
Yes.
That's great. I love it.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
No, it was really, it was a sacrifice. It was very traumatizing for me. I mean, also for me, COVID happened when I was 23. And like, there was a lot of expectations that I had for my life growing up Orthodox Jewish as well, like getting married young and thinking that my life was going to turn out a certain way. It did not. And I'm grateful. And I think I'm exactly on time for my life and how it's supposed to be. But that being said, I did feel gypped. And in life in general, especially with my dad getting sick at a young age, I was like, I know other people have hard challenges, but when you're going through something, all you think about is that you have it the worst.
Yeah.
And so like, I just felt like I was too young to be dealing with all of this. And then COVID hit and I felt like I had years of my life and my youth lost
the COVID ends and I'm like 26, 27 and I'm already in my late 20s and there's already that like pressure, right? Yeah. Meanwhile, I have no concept of time anymore. And I think I'm in my young 20s. Sometimes people would ask me how old I was and I would look them directly in the eye and I was like, I'm 19. And I believed it, you know, and be like, oh my God, no, I'm not. I'm so sorry. I'm 23. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Where did 4 years go?
No, I'm not. I'm 27, you know, and now I'm 29. Yes. And like, still feeling super young energetically, but on this trip, it's bullshit. Don't let them tell anyone. Listen, it's great to feel youthful and energetic and playful and whatever, but that's not the same thing as being youthful. You're youthful when you're young and zahu, that's it. Like when I was on this trip, there was three girls who were younger. Like there was like a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, and a 23-year-old. And they were very like, woo kind of energy, which is, we love that, right? Yeah. I was never a woo girl, they are. But like, when I tell you that from day one, I already was feeling it in my hip flexors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? By day two, I already had someone holding my backpack for me. Any video you see with me in a backpack was just for the gram. I took it off right afterwards.
So did you have Sherpas?
We did. Okay. And guides. And there was like,
they're not called Sherpas there?
No, they're called porters.
Porters, okay.
Porters.
I just
and
know
guides.
Not Kilimanjaro, Himalayas. They call Sherpas. You get Sherpas, right.
So, no, yeah, you can't go just by yourself. But, and then Mama Karen, who's turning 60, she doesn't work. And so she was like training hard and she lives in Seattle. So there was mountains. So she really got the elevation training. Mm-hmm. She was training at Mount Rainier, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other girl who was 32, she was a marathon runner. So it's like, I was definitely the least in shape, right? And it would take me so much longer. Like, sometimes I would get to camp 2-3 hours after everybody else, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, even some at night, everyone else left at midnight, but they all agreed that I needed a little TLC. So I left at 10 p.m. because I needed a head start. I was the first one to start on the mountain that night. I was the last one to finish on the mountain that day. I finished at 7:20 a.m. And like, it's an accomplishment and I did it and I'm proud. But at the same time, like, there is still that anger in me where it's like, if I was in better shape, I would have enjoyed that experience so much more. And it really is a once in a lifetime experience. Like, I don't think I'm going to be going back, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like, that's why ever since I've gotten back, I've really been trying to take my health seriously and like really hitting the gym pretty hard because.
Is that kind of why you downplay the significance of it?
Yeah, because I don't think it felt significant to me. Almost to the fact where I pretty much hallucinated the way up the mountain that night too on Summit night. And when I got to the top, I don't know what I was expecting to feel, but my first reaction was, oh, that's it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's that quote where they say, wherever you go, there you are, right?
Yes.
And I think I was expecting to have this transformative, amazing, like, here I am on the world's largest freestanding mountain, one of the 7 summits. Like, I'm so cool. I'm so amazing. I raised all this money for charity, blah, blah, blah. And all I felt was disappointment that I only made it to the first summit and not all 3, and that it took me so long, and I just wanted to go home.
I get that.
So,
and that's okay.
It is okay. It is okay. Yeah,
that makes sense. The emotional depression after it, especially if that's your experience compared to your expectation.
I didn't really know what I was expecting, but I certainly wasn't expecting it to be that hard. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, you do know it's like climbing a mountain. I'm like, yeah, but I didn't think it was going to be that hard. And then like everyone was talking about how like with the guides, like they say pole pole in Swahili, which means slowly, slowly. Mm-hmm. I was like, perfect. Yes. I am a slow kind of girl, right?
Right.
Well, there's also haraka haraka, which means fast. So they start going, they're like, pole pole. I'm like, this is not pole pole. You're going haraka haraka. I can't do that. And do you know that after I got down, they all told, like the guides told me that they actually based on my energy levels and pace did not think I was going to make it to the top.
See?
And the girls were saying when they passed me, they're like, they've never seen someone with such a determined look on their face. But also determined to do it at my pace. We're not supposed to stop on the mountain. And I kept stopping. Even if there wasn't a rock to sit on, I just sat on the mountain. Mm-hmm.
That is amazing. There are so many incredible lessons to take from that.
Yeah.
How many times you could have given up.
Oh, so many. Yeah. But in my head, that was never an option. To me, the only way home was up. And then I heard another mountain climber, I was watching a video, and he was saying, the mountain doesn't require perfection. It just requires you to put one foot in front of the other. And I just kept thinking to myself, like, I wanted that legacy. Like, God damn it. If it was the last thing I was going to do, I was going to make it to the top of that mountain.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, for some of us, one day in life can feel like that entire mountain. And there have been days in my sobriety when I have felt like my biggest accomplishment was getting my head to the pillow sober that day.
Right.
And all I could do to get through it was put the wild one thing. Foot
Life is
in
still
front
normal even
other.
After you do something exactly. incredible. Like, I was at the gym maybe like a week later and I was struggling through a 30-second plank. And I was like, it felt just as hard as someone like oh my God, if you climbed the fucking mountain, you could hold a 36-foot, you little bitch.
I can climb a mountain, but dang, oh my God. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that, because that's the real. And that's what I think that is so hard for us to accept about ourselves and to put out there.
Yeah.
Like, the real about this, running the selfie room, is it's hard.
Yeah.
And it's scary. I'm frightened daily that I'm going to lose everything. Because, I mean, let's face it, people don't need selfies. You know? And it's just, there are people who are good, to have really great products, really great businesses out there that are shutting down, that I look up to and I'm like, if they can't make it, how am I going to make it? You know? But then there are people I look at who are making it, and then their inspiration. Like, if they can make it, I can make it. And that's how you are to me. Like, when you talk about climbing that mountain with determination, slowly, and you sit down on the mountain, even though you were told not to, you do it anyways.
Yeah.
And that tells me that if you can do that, that tells so many people, if you can do that, I can do that. Thank you. Thank you for that. That's incredible. And I feel like that's part of why I talk about what I've been through. If I can do it, if I can leave a marriage after 17 years of emotional abuse and finally choose me, you can do it too.
But also, if you think about people who are successful, obviously there's our heroes, the ones we really respect and think that they're so amazing and whatever. But again, we only see the highlight reels. They say never meet your hero
in
person.
That's exactly right.
Right?
Yes.
But the other thing is like, I know a lot of people who are very successful, and I think they are the dumbest motherfuckers I've ever met in my entire life.
Right?
And I'm like, no. And
oh
I'm like,
gosh,
I think
that's so true.
I also think back to my corporate days where I'm like looking at some of these people and I'm like,
yeah,
how, you know, I
100%.
mean, I know part of it is you slept your way to the top, but like,
yeah,
the
but
other,
some of it is also privilege.
Yeah. There's privilege of being
Knowing
born
the right
into the right
people,
families
right
and like
right
nepotism
time.
For sure. But even, I think that's why I like being an entrepreneur versus being in the corporate world, because I'm like, nobody is handing me anything. And like, while I could cry about that, I love it because I'm creating something. And mm-hmm. I will tell you something. I am the most stubborn motherfucker you will ever meet in your entire life. I'm very tenacious,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also incredibly patient.
Mm.
And there was one line that someone said to me that I didn't appreciate at the time because I was moving real slow. But this guy who I worked with in my first job, who I was making these flyers for, he's like, he told me, his boss said to him, I want it fast and I want it right. But if I can't have it fast, I want it right.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, do you want this? And don't worry about if it will fail, because here's the thing. You've been through so many seasons of your life
mm-hmm.
that if it fails, you'll figure something else
out. Yeah.
But the thing is do you want this?
Yeah.
So then keep trying.
Mm-hmm. So what I want from this place is for more people to be able to come and experience what it can do for them.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want people to be able...
What can it do for them? Like, I know my experience, but like, for you, speaking passionately, like, why should anyone come to the
selfie
room?
So here's what I see. I see people walk in, and this is not every person who comes in. This is just like my favorite. When people come in here, usually women, And they say things like, I'm not photogenic. I never like pictures of myself. I don't know what to do in pictures. Da 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 da. And then they buy a ticket reluctantly, or they come with friends. And I give them the selfie kit, which the tripod and the remote.
Yeah.
And then let them loose in here. And I show them around, like, here's this, here's that. I show them how to use the lighting to move it, make sure they're lit well, and let them alone. And then 15, 20 minutes later, I, like, walk around and I check on people. And I see them genuinely smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, how's it going? And they're like, good. And I'm like, let me see what's been your favorite scene. Yeah. And then they'll, like, pull up their phone and scroll through pictures that they took of themselves minutes ago. And the look they have in their eyes when they see that photo of themselves, and they love it.
Mm.
They are in love with themselves for the first time in who knows how long.
Yeah.
And they don't even see it. They don't even realize it. But I get to see it on their face. Mm. I get to see it in their eyes. I see them light up when they look at themselves.
Yeah.
And that's magic. And that's what I want for people. I want people to find that connection to themselves again through selfies. Selfies is not vain. It can be, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. The first selfie was taken in the 1800s by some guy, you know, who just, like, was messing with his camera. He set it down, he ran around, and then somehow rigged up some contraption to get the shutter to go off and took his first selfie. So selfies aren't new.
Yeah.
There are very famous selfies, you know, from people like the Dalai Lama has selfies, you know, with people. And it can be a way of self-discovery. It can be a way of documenting your journey and introspection. So we're partnering. So we opened a new professional photo studio in the back, and I want to talk about Jessa Ballow from Unruly Blooms. She's an incredible photographer, and she's partnered with me to open that studio. And so she's the studio director. And she's doing a workshop with two friends of hers called Self Gaze.
And
it's
that.
Right. It's like a take on the male gaze, right? But it's like taking that hard look at yourself and with love and acceptance. And understanding, like, why do you look at yourself the way you do? And how does that feel? And what does that mean? And what do you do with it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just so beautiful. And I think that there are a lot of really powerful things that can happen for individuals at the selfie room. And it's a fun experience for people to come and make really cool memories together.
100%.
That you can't get anywhere else, because there's so many different, such a variety of things to do, places to take pictures, and
it's
backgrounds.
It's a very magical space.
Thank you.
So, guys, we thought that we would end on a very playful note. We've definitely talked about a lot of, like, intense, serious stuff, which I don't know if we expected it to go in that direction.
Yeah.
You did?
I always did.
Okay.
I always go deep. I don't do small talk very well.
Oh, I love that. That's okay. That's perfect.
Dude, you didn't know that about me. But is it deeper than you expected?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you never know what people are going to be comfortable sharing. But I'm a big believer in the magic of the mic. But I will say, this has been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to make sure the fire was going. And yeah, this whole basis of this podcast is based on this Hebrew quote, which is Ezeh Chacham, Halo Meimi Kol Adam, which means one who is wise is one who learns from everyone. And we have learned so much from you. So if you can leave us with one last life lesson or favorite quote.
So part of me wants to say it's from my time in recovery. If not for the 12 steps, I wouldn't be here. But in order to get through them, I had to always keep these three things in mind, that I have to be honest, open-minded, and willing.
Hmm.
And then I can do
anything.
But what changed my life before that was the Four Agreements. Have you read them?
I haven't.
Oh, the book by Don Miguel Ruiz.
I need to read it.
It's incredibly life-changing.
Okay.
The Four Agreements. One, don't take anything personally.
Mm.
Two, don't make assumptions. Three, always do your best. And four, be impeccable with your word.
Okay.
But when you dig into them, it gets life, like I said, life changing. And some of them are a little bit different than what you might think just based on the title of the agreement.
Yeah.
And it talks about like how, why is it an agreement? Because we agree to live by certain rules that we were taught. And when we see that there are other ways, but don't try them out, it's because we're agreeing to the rules that we inherited, the roles that we inherited. But once we see that those were created by someone else who was living by the roles and rules created by someone else, It's like that generational stuff that can get passed on and breaking that cycle.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I also wanted to send a challenge your way.
Oh.
We were talking earlier about the purpose of the selfie room, the magic of the selfie room, and what you hope everyone who walks through those doors experiences. But we also talked about, throughout this episode, insecurities you felt through different seasons and times of your life, and even just random Tuesday, you know? But I want to challenge you, because I've been learning Kabbalah, and it really talks about energy is everything, and everything we see is a reflection of what's internal inside of ourselves. And especially when you are the founder of a company, it is so important that your energy is in the right space. So if you're wanting people to leave with self-esteem and that magic and that love for themselves, you need to have it first and foremost. Because you're already so great at creating and building people up. Mm-hmm. But imagine energetically, if from your internal core, you were so strong within your own love, how that would even 10x what you're already doing.
The second person in 2 days to tell me something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that I hear you. I finally hear you, universe. Thank you. It's like, I feel like based on what you just said, I need to be taking selfies in here every day.
Yeah.
And sharing them.
Yeah. And I would also add to that, like, whether it's like a reel of you just like setting it up, or even, and then showing the look after in the reel. I also just learned how to add stickers where you can do like the photos. You can show the behind the scenes with the selfie in the corner, which could be really cool.
Yes.
But like in the content part for the coffee, if you were to write, what does a selfie mean to me? What am I trying to embody? And like that could be like the more beautiful part, right?
Right. The more personal, deep part, like the story behind it. I was told that the brand of the selfie room is could use a bit more personalization. Like, what is the story? And whenever I tell people about what I feel when people come in here and they experience that magic, they're like, that's incredible. Like,
it is incredible.
I want to hear that. Like,
it
that
changed me when I heard you say that. That changed my whole perspective on selfies. Like,
yeah,
I came into the space and it was like really cute and beautiful and whatever, but like, I still felt a certain type of way about photos, right? It was only when I saw how emotional you got, like your eyes teared over and you were like speaking so from the heart. I was like, no, she's right.
Really?
Yeah. And it totally changed like the trajectory of my year because of it. So it's true.
Thank you.
When you're authentic, you really do change people's lives.
Thank you, as do you. And I'm really grateful that you would take so much of your time to be here with me and talk to me about me today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, this has definitely been the most fun. And with that, What can my audience do to support you in the selfie room?
Go and follow, like, share, comment, yes. Please. Your coffee is honestly the best coffee that I've tasted in St. Louis.
Thanks.
Yeah. And I'm really behind your concept of the brick and mortar with the library look, you know, with the floor to ceiling.
We found the building.
Yeah, girl. It's just a matter of time. One foot in front of the other.
I told them, I'm like, they're like, how soon do you want this? I'm like, I have a 12-year plan. Well, I guess it's
11. You mean 12 month?
No.
12 year.
Correct.
Good.
So I love that. My goal is to have a coffee shop by the time I'm 40. And if it happens before, then I'm blessed. And this way, I'm not disappointed in timelines.
Impressive.
I'm like, people are like, you're so chill and easy to work with. It's because I'm just a really faith-based person.
Yes. I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
A lot of this, you're chill, you're the way that people connect to you because you're so comfortable and safe to talk to and be around.
And my name means Nechama. It means comfort, by the way.
Oh, see,
it all.
Embody that. And yeah. It's your faith, you know, and it's like the fact that you stand firm in that.
Yeah.
And you know who you are. And that's an example in and of itself.
We're going to link all the info in the bio so that people can follow. Thanks so much for having us.
For having me on your podcast. This is so very cool. It's my first time ever being on a podcast.
Really?
Three, two, one.
If you guys are not already watching the episode, the video is on Spotify and YouTube, and I highly recommend you watch it because we're in the selfie room. It's such a visual experience.
We're in the ball pit.
I'm in a ball pit.
Not a playpen. A ball pit.
Anyways, if you're not already subscribed on YouTube, what are you doing with your life? Go subscribe to me so that I can get paid for entertaining you. Have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.